Hi, guys, and welcome back to this week's episode of Millennial Mirrors, a discussion on millennial life in the Middle East. So this episode is about Arab identity. I think it's so easy to kind of get enclosed in what your view of Arab identity is, depending on where you're from. Like for me, as a Khaliji who's grown up and lived most of my life in the Gulf, I think I see it in a very specific way. And I wanted to kind of explore what other ways you could look at it and how things are changing for the Arab identity. And so I brought in OT and Sofyan, both guys who study it and look at it from different perspectives. And we had a really interesting discussion. So listen in, and I hope you like it. This episode is sponsored by Carriage, a great app for ordering what you need in a super convenient way with no minimum orders. You could literally just order a cup of coffee. Okay, guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Hey.
So let's start with you guys just giving people a quick introduction. So do you want to start, OT?
Yes, sir. So my name is Omar Tom, commonly known as OT. I come from an advertising background. I used to be a strategic planner and eventually left that to start my own agency. And now I pretty much run the most unorthodox, unusual creative agency model that operates between a consultancy as well as a content development business.
To say the least.
I wear many hats throughout the day. It just depends on what time of the day it is, and I do different roles. But that was initially born out of the Dukan Show podcast, which I started back in late 2015.
Amazing. Very cool. And over to Sofyan.
Yeah, so I'm Sofyan Simrabet. I've been in Dubai for more than 11 years. I'm French Algerian, and I'm actually leading now two creative ventures. The first one is the Confused Arab, which is especially focused on Arab identities.
Yeah.
With an S, very important. And other key agency I'm working on is Carta. She's specialized on cultural marketing and luxury marketing.
Amazing. So the reason I kind of wanted both of you guys on this episode is because this episode is about Arab identity. And I think both of you guys do quite a bit to, I guess, study that or look at it. So let's start with, what does identity mean to you? Like, how do you define it?
Good one. I think for me today, identity is a bit of I'm in an unusual space with identity at the moment, because identity is pretty much who you are, whether as an individual or as a collective, right? So it's either who I am or who we are. And that's usually how I look at it. And then there's an initial system of borders that have been designed, and then that tells you what your identity is as a collective. But then that is not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily hold true to the experience anymore. So for example, a friend of ours who is, his grandparents came to the UAE during the oil industry when he first kicked off, and they were some of the first expats to come out here. They're originally British. Yeah. And then his parents met in high school here.
Okay.
Right? So his grandparents from both his mom and his dad's side, and then both his parents met here. Wow. He was born and raised here. So where is he from?
So this is a question I always struggle with. What do you say when people ask you where you're from? Because I get asked that question, and I'm like, well, I'm from Kuwait, where I was born and raised, but my dad's Saudi.
Yeah.
So that's what my passport is. But I've been living here for 4 years. Of course, I speak with this accent, so that just confuses everyone completely.
Yeah.
So how do you answer that question when people are like...
So that's the fun one. I always tell people I'm Sudanese, and it depends who I'm talking to. And I think this is the interesting bit. It's so subjective, because with some people, I feel like I don't need to give too much of an explanation.
Yeah.
With Arabs, I feel this a lot, where I feel like I need to give it context
before
I get stereotyped. Like, I try to stop it before I get put in that box. Let me tell you what I'm actually from, you know, kind of thing. So it's like, okay, so I'm Sudanese, born not only in Sudan, but like in my mom's bedroom in the city she's from. And then I spent the earlier years of my life partially in the UAE, because that's where my dad set his business. But then I grew up in different parts of the world because we traveled so much. So I spent years in the UK, I spent years in the US, and I spent years in East Asia. It's in the most unusual places. But, you know, the UAE somewhat was kind of home. We come back here. And then in my college years and later on, I moved to the States and I lived in
right.
the Bay Area for a while. So I didn't come back to the UAE till 2015.
Right.
So because of that, it's always like I feel the need to explain this.
You have to like give a lot of context.
Exactly. And then yeah. they want to know where my accent comes from. And then it's this whole thing. Like, because for the, I used to work for this agency and for a couple of years. And throughout that time, there were no points of time where I needed to speak in Arabic for whatever reason. It just didn't come up. And people just assumed I was American the whole time. I don't know, I wasn't. And I'll never forget this experience. My mom called and I picked up the phone in the elevator and I was just talking to my mom in Arabic and those girls shrieked, like in a horror movie. She shrieked.
Oh,
and
wow.
she looked at me with the smile. She's like, oh my God, you speak Arabic. Like yes, I do. Yes, yeah. But how? Where'd you learn? And I'm like, because I am Arab, right? Like, and then I felt the need to kind of explain it to her.
More
I'm like,
more.
Here's some water. Calm down. Take a deep breath. Everything's okay.
Nothing has changed. I'm still the
same guy, right? So it's always a difficult conversation. So that's where the third culture kid. Statement that helped me start the casual
we'll
game.
We'll get to that part, but before we go to there, so what are your thoughts on all of this, Sofyan, in terms of like what identity is?
So, I mean, identity for me is you have different ways of defining identities.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've noticed, I always like prefer to speak about identities at plural because identity is, it starts with I, so yeah, this is who I am, and it ends with why, which is like just to tell you who you think I am. So identity can be like a key for you just to introduce yourself to people, but at the same time can be also a filter through which people are going to judge you, to apprehend you. As Omar was saying, I mean, it depends. It's actually, I did last year an installation called Hawa City, which was about how identities are constructions.
Right.
Because, I mean, it takes time to build your own identity because you have different kind of identities. You have social, sexual, religious identities, cultural identities, and you have to pick one.
Yeah.
I mean, the society by itself will give you one, will stamp you on, will tattoo some identities on you. But then after, you need to choose on which cards you want to choose. So I think it's like a game. I like to see it as a game.
I agree.
Yeah.
Nice one, right?
I'm not... you remember Jawad? Like the chameleon? Yeah. it depends exactly which kind of identity you want to play on.
So ever shifting and you pull out whatever identity you feel you
being
need to...
Being very loyal to who you are, deeply. Mm-hmm. What I mean is that I don't want to appear as someone like being... like a player, not in the sense you believe.
Not in the black sense.
But I mean that you can play with your identities, but first of all, you need to know who you are.
True.
And to build yourself, and then after you can play with it.
I get that. Yeah. It's kind of like you leverage it to that situation you're in.
Definitely,
to what works
to
your advantage, right?
Yeah. Yes,
I feel I've seen that with Reem a lot, because Reem is half Iraqi, half Filipino, Canadian.
Right.
So it depends who she talking to, that answer always changes.
Which I think that's very much happening more and more. And that's where we come to the whole third culture kid thing you were talking about before. So do you want to kind of give people, I guess, a definition of what a third culture kid is?
Sure. So the book definition is people that grew up in a country that is not their parents developing. They're not their parents' origin. Or some others would say they spent their developing years in a country that is not where their parents are from.
Right.
But... the main thing about being a third culture kid with identity is the fact that you just don't fit in. You're the other,
right?
So, for example, if you're in a school of science majors and you're a jock, you don't fit in, right? Or if you're a school of jocks and you're the scientist, you don't fit in that sense. So the shared commonality across third culture kids is the struggle of answering where is home.
Right.
As you're saying, you know, your dad's Saudi, but then Kuwait, but then here, and your accent, like, so where is home? Where do you pinpoint that to?
So with the increasing number of, let's say, global citizens and third culture kids or neo-Bedouins or however you want to define it, like...
I'd like diaspora, actually.
Hmm?
Diaspora.
I like diaspora.
Diaspora, okay.
I'll tell you after why.
So I just wanted to take a moment to define diaspora or diaspora, depending on how you want to pronounce it, because the guys use it quite a bit in this episode. It's defined as a large group of people with a similar heritage or homeland who have since moved out to places all over the world. Now back to the episode. How do you think that's affecting the collective Arab identity? Because I think we can't deny the fact that it's becoming a bigger and bigger kind of percentage of the population in terms of the Middle East, the third culture kids, the people who are moving here for work, and all these kinds of things. So how do you think that affects the Arab identity as like a collective?
So I'll come back to the diaspora thing because it's very linked to what you just mentioned. Being part of a diaspora means that you're part of the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And you share the same history and also the same, I won't say objective, but the same, you're sharing the same, plan for your people.
Right.
It means that, for example, I do consider myself being part of the Arab diaspora, even though I was born in France, I grew up in France. You know, like you guys, you would be very surprised to see where the confused Arab like was born and grew up. I was born like in Amélie Poulain, small French city.
Okay.
But because I was part of a family where I've been educated in the fact that we are Arab, Berber, North African, that was part of my culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of diaspora is like, even though I'm North African, even though I'm French, Algerian, when I see what's going on in Sudan or what's going on, for example, in Iraq or in Palestine or somewhere else, I had the feel that my people was affected, or my people was performing, or my people. So that's a key point, just the Arabness.
Yeah.
But then after this new Arabness is also is new because it's very different from Pan-Arabism, you know, like, and we're very far from Nasserism and what happened in the 40s, 50s, 60s and until lately. So I think culture is a big part of it because we are sharing some cultural values.
Okay.
It means also that we do accept some differences, and that's major. I think that Omar, when you were saying that people were surprised that you're not American but you're Arab, it's because people tend to think that Arab is one kind of thing. That Arabs eat the shawarma, they smoke shisha, and they. I'm from a place where we don't do that.
Yeah. So what are the shared values? Some of the shared values that you think we have as Arabs.
I'll start. I mean, more than values, because I mean, when I say values, it's more like history, culture.
Okay.
What do I mean by history? Is just like referring to a lost past, and I think that was one of the big issues we had, like as Arabs, that for a long time we were more referring to the past than to the future. That's why, you know, like in the confused Arab, I'm always mentioning something which is like the future of nostalgia.
Yeah.
Is that because we all grew up with nostalgia.
Yeah.
Telling us that, yeah, it used to be better before, that ya hasra, ya zaman, you don't know
how romantic it was before. About, yeah.
Exactly.
The past,
and people forgetting that nostalgia is a filter. It's a filter of the past.
You only remember the good times.
Yeah.
You know, like we all saw these pictures of, Baghdad or Cairo in the 40s, 50s, women wearing miniskirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how many of those? Mm. The majority of ladies, like, were not going to school.
Yeah.
The level of literacy was not
lower,
the same,
definitely.
Was lower, definitely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think that we need to look at the glass half empty and half full also.
Or just be a bit more realistic about the nostalgia that we have.
Exactly. And to some extent also, I think that this nostalgia is not just bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we can take it positively, but just to build something new.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea behind like the future of nostalgia.
Yeah, I think...
I totally agree. Because like... we had this family debate once. They got a bit heated because... my dad's talking about reinvesting back in Sudan and business and different things, and I was all for it. But he kept talking about this romance of how great it is and all these great things that are happening. I'm like, wait, that's not today's reality. He's like, yeah, it's not, but it's like back in my day. And I'm like, see, I get back in your day. Where are we moving to? Because when you're telling me business investment and we're going to put cash in and actually build the business, this is not a back in my day conversation anymore. This is a future conversation,
right?
And trying to gauge that filter and trying to help him see that, okay, Baba, it's not the way you used to think it is. It's not like that anymore. And he's conscious. He's aware of it, but he believes, but also to his credit, he believes it's cyclical.
Right.
So it's like, it's bad now, it's about to get better, and it's going to become like the good old days.
Yeah, you know?
So it's like, okay, there's a point to that as well. And I find that really interesting because the to your point, like the nostalgia is beautiful. It makes you feel good. You remember the good times. But then, yeah, there were a lot of people that are uneducated. There was polio. Yeah. There were all these issues and problems that did exist as well. So how do we balance that? And, you know, how do we come together? I think when we talk about Arab identity and Arab diaspora as a collective group of people, because I think that I personally, what I experienced and I find difficult sometimes is the inter-Arab racism.
Right.
And I think that tends to be a bit more, I think it's passive nature, makes it a lot tougher to manage as opposed to American, for example. Like, I remember I'm walking in the street in California, this lady comes up to me, I don't like your kindness, old lady, interaction.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas an Arab one, you will have interactions, but it's incredibly passive. They're not in your face
like
about
they're not going to say it to your face. It'll just be like under, but then
that impacts your well-being.
Right. Again, I would say it depends which kind of Arabs.
Yeah, of course, guaranteed, yeah.
I don't know.
And I think we experience it in different ways and different ways. So it's like, okay, like in the advertising industry, it's very heavy.
Right.
I feel it so heavily, yeah. Right?
Anjad? Anjad?
Exactly.
Okay, guys. Right? So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with more from OT and Sofyan. This episode is sponsored by Carriage UAE, where you can get everything from food to groceries and even pet supplies. As someone who orders pretty much everything, I pay a lot in delivery charges every month. But now you can sign up for Carriage Black for 20 dirhams a month and get unlimited free deliveries, which saves me a bunch of money so I can order even more stuff. If you haven't tried it out yet, go to your app store and download the Carriage app. Check out the episode description of this podcast for more info. So we're back with OT and Sofyan, and we were talking about, I guess, inter-Arab racism. So take it away.
Okay, I'll try to keep it brief because we already kind of spoke about it. But I think the thing is that with the inter-Arab racism is that there's preferences that tend to be mostly post-colonial. And I actually had this debate, funny enough, with a Nigerian girl yesterday about the impact of this. She's like, you know, we shouldn't just think about, you know, we shouldn't blame everything on being post-colonial. I was like, well, that is true, yes.
Can you just define post-colonial for listeners who might not know?
So especially to be more specific.
Frantz Fanon.
To be more specific to the Arab world itself, we're all colonized by European countries. And then that experience includes the borders that have been created. Mm-hmm. In an African context, the African debt, for example, France today actually relies heavily on the African debt that they've created from thin air, in a way. We had England, Italy, and they kind of just, when they left the Middle East and they left Africa, they left it with a big dent and a large impact on it. For example, Sudan was was colonized by the Brits at some point. So when they left, and this is, you feel this experience across the Middle East, there's a preference to lighter skin. There's a preference to colored eyes, less kinky hair.
Right. Yeah.
So for example, within Sudan, they call it colorism. So if you're light skinned, you know, there's just better opportunities in life generally for you in Sudan. You know, if your hair is less kinky, you get better opportunities.
Well, I mean, it's still till today. Like, our parents used to yell at us if we were out in the sun for too long because you're getting dark, right? Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And you've been conditioned. Like, sometimes a mom would tell her kids, like, yo, don't wear an afro. That is not a professional look.
Right.
Then why is an afro not a professional look when that's your natural hair? So then it leaves you with these questions. In an Arab context, I think that resulted in racism. There were celebrities and artists and people that would come into public spaces and speak about it when it seems normal.
Yeah.
For example, last year, Ramadan, the Kuwaiti series that had the joke, that had blackface. These two comedians, straight up blackface and this stereotyping joke of Sudanese people that caused ruckus on the internet. And
if I could add something, I could add something else, I think more than colorism, I mean, you have colorism, but also you have like social racism, especially like if you speak about Sudanese, thinking that they are lazy, that they're slow, and people will think that is quite normal.
That's something, I mean, it's with so, I mean, I feel like in the Middle East, every country has its stereotypes of the other countries, whether it's Sudanese, whether it's Khalijis, whether it's all of that. You know,
just like you know, you say Middle East. I'm not Middle Eastern.
Yeah, that's true.
So Middle East, it's not Middle Eastern either.
That's true. I guess. So I think Arab. It's Arab, yeah.
No, Middle East and North Africa.
North Africa, yeah.
Because I think something also which is like major, that's, I mean, when you look at the history of the so-called Arab world, I do believe that we are sharing a lot of, I said, history, values, beyond religion. I'm just talking language also, because that's very interesting when you look at how Arabization was done, you know, like through different regions. You have like racism. You were mentioning like modern Bedouin or like...
Yeah, like a new Bedouin.
Neo-Bedouin, I mean, neo-Bedouin comes with neo-tribalism.
Yes.
And that's very important. It means also that you have a classification.
Yeah.
You mean that, and that's very interesting because money can change also this classification. I would say in the 50s to 70s, let's say 90s, the center of the Arab world was Egypt and Levant. Lately, it's the Gulf.
Right.
But it's very interesting to see that some regions have, or some countries have been kept in the periphery of this Arab world. I would say North Africa, I would say Iraq, I would say Yemen, and I would say Sudan. Countries which have been like culturally very rich, if not the center of the Arab world.
Right.
I mean, when you go to Jeddah, when you go to a lot of places in Saudi Arabia, you always have like places referring to Andalusia or to Granada or to... I mean, being North African Algerian, I'm the descendant of Andalusia. That's very interesting. Yemen is the same thing, or Iraq, and but because the first Arab Renaissance, I'm talking about the first because I do expect a new
another one.
The Nahda al-Arabiya was born in the Levant, like Lebanon, Syria, and to some extent also to Egypt, which actually, I mean, imposed a certain domination of the Arab world, Arab culture, and the Arab language, Arabic language.
Yeah.
You know, it's very funny that, I mean, being Sudanese, I'm sure quite often when you speak, people tell
they
you, they say, oh, no, but that's not an Arabic world. But that's not an Arabic world. When you look, it's an Arabic world. But it's just like when people in the late 90s decided to unify the language, they choose their own dialect.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a form of soft power, by the way.
Yes,
yeah, it is. Media... a soft power at the end of the day, right? Today we all share the common tongue of English, even though there were three Arabs behind the microphone right now.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
But that is.
Sufyan
demanded that we do this episode in Arabic. I was like, sorry, but like,
it's the export of American culture and American media, right? That in itself is a form of soft power.
So that brings about like the next question, which is, what do you think are the new things that are influencing the Arab identity at the moment? So one would be, for example, like you said, the fact that there are three Arabs sitting behind mics talking English.
Yeah.
I mean, so what are the new influences?
I think one is that the quote unquote, the democratization of media is just the fact that now I can create my, I'm not limited to Levant and Egyptian export of culture through media anymore.
Right.
I have access and I have a responsibility that I could do the same thing now. That's something I couldn't do before, which is, I don't know if you know, Qaswara, who is the CEO of U-Turn Productions from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
He was speaking at Dubai Links a couple of years ago, and he said that that Saudi television and this traditional Saudi media does not represent them as Saudi, and their 73% of the population is below the age of 30. So what the birth of U-Turn and, you know, Saudi kids creating amazing content online, he's like, we're exporting our culture for ourselves, to speak for us, to share our narrative, and to change the perceptions of Saudi Arabia. One of the trends is now that we're combating stereotypes, we're combating racism, we're combating different issues through the power of media, through, and in some, and to be quite frank, the way we're doing it ourselves is that we're trying to combat it through messages of love and peace and togetherness, as opposed to trying to fight fire with fire, because that's not going to work, right? Which is why Saudi is doing so well, because they mask it in comedy.
Right.
So I'm masking social commentary and all the issues in comedy, and it works. I chose to keep the canon English, even though I actually have an Arabic version of the show that's been branded, that was ready to go live. I held on it for a while because I started getting messages from Americans that didn't understand. They're like, you sound just like us and you're Arab. We didn't know such people existed. Right. We didn't know Islam was like that.
So that brings up an interesting point also, because how we're being portrayed in our local media, yeah, but then there's also the portrayal of Arabs in Western media. Yeah. And there's this kind of, I guess, you don't feel represented in either, to a certain
extent. No, you don't.
I guess yeah, it depends. I mean, what Omar just said is quite important. It depends to who you want to speak also.
Right.
And at the beginning, you know, when I started the Confused Arab, I mean, my target was clearly Arabs from the diaspora.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because I do consider Dubai being the biggest diaspora city, because it's one of the only cities in the world where you can have Kuwaiti, Sudanese, and Algerian at the same table.
Yeah.
London, maybe. Paris, less. But for me, Dubai is a diaspora city. Most important thing, I mean, is to know who you are targeting.
Who's your target?
Mm-hmm.
Who's your target? That's very important.
Yeah.
Because quite often I tend to think that we do things for Westerners.
Yeah.
Still, huh? Which I think is, I mean, I'm trying to do things for us from the diaspora. But at the same time, when I'm seeing like so many energy from the region, I'm like, we need to do things also for people here.
Yeah.
And which to some extent is also like pushing us to use Arabic.
Yeah,
because, I agree.
Yeah.
And I mean, we need to oblige ourselves. Yeah. It's a commitment.
And I think too that funny, it's just funny. That's why I ended up taking on like Arabic interviews on television and on Arabic radio stations. Like I was getting on and speaking in Arabic. And I was like, I would just push to speak in like Sudanese Arabic to kind of just get that across. Because when one of the common questions I used to get asked a lot is like, why did I start the show or why did I start the con? And my answers were always the same. Like in Arab medium, Sudanese tend to be so racially profiled and marginalized that we come under such negative light. Like you're talking about the lazy stereotype.
Right.
One of the questions I always tell me, I was like, introduce me to a lazy Sudanese and I will hold back on my comments.
Right.
Especially when they try to throw it in as you're like, oh, you know, the comment I get a lot is, yo, you're not lazy for a Sudanese, huh? Huh? And people laugh.
Yes,
I'm like, exactly. And I'm like, no. Tell me a lazy Sudanese that you've met.
Right.
Right. And I will pull back.
That's
because
crazy.
Like I will outwork anybody any day of the week.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't allow for that joke to kind of go through.
Yeah.
So this was one issue. And then in Western media, we're perceived very negatively. So the creation of my show was to speak to that, to represent that, but also there is a bigger collective we, which was not about me. Eventually, it's other people. That's why Akawi's Lebanese, right? Reem is Iraqi, Filipino.
Right.
We have a different audience that we speak to as well.
Right.
And in that essence, the creation of it was to be able to say, okay, we as Arabs are actually, there is hope, there is a better avenue for it. There's a statement of togetherness. There's a cultural message that we're trying to push for as much as possible. And, you know, there are people that get it and kind of come into it. There are people that don't. And the ones that don't, I'm like, why don't you? And let's talk it through and let's figure each other out and let's learn about each other, right? Because we have Kisra, we eat with our hands, right?
Yeah.
We have biryani. You also happen to eat with your hands.
Yeah.
You call, Emiratis call rice ish.
Yeah.
In Sudan, we call bread ish.
Yeah.
The same word, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Emiratis khashim is their nose. In Sudan, khashim is your lips.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So then, like,
but we shared something. Bunya. We say bunya.
Bunya, right? For a punch, like Sudanese and Nigerian, right?
Interesting.
So, like, these little things. So there is a sense of togetherness that we could actually develop. And the idea is that, okay, let's leverage and use media for this positive messaging. And let's have these conversations. Let's have the discourse. Let's disagree and let's debate and let's kind of grow from that together. So I constantly try to push for that as much as possible on the shows. And like Sufyan does it spectacularly with a lot of his artwork. And one of the things I love about him is like his Insta story series.
Yeah, are
incredible.
Amazing.
Incredible. Where
if you guys are not following the Confused Arab on Instagram, you need to. His Instagram stories are amazing.
Incredibly. And like what's great about it is like it's topical. So something would happen and it'll trigger him and then he'll decide to educate everybody on it. And he'll have this series of just breaking down the origin of the word, how things came about and what's the history of it and what does it mean today's context and the slang. And he kind of gives you a full picture of it. And I loved it. And like that's part of the same journey where, okay, let's educate each other. And he does it in English, Arabic and French.
Yeah.
Right, which is also pretty cool. And I think
because Omar speaks French, it doesn't want to say
that. Right? But point is that like this is where we're going. I believe we should be going towards, whether it's with the can or through social media or any media. And this is the idea of like media is democratized now. You can create that content for yourself. We all have that responsibility. I mean, you got two shows now, right? And you're developing your third and your next show. So you know, it's part of that journey for
but
all
it's,
of
yeah,
us.
But it's interesting because like you said, I mean, hopefully then the coming shows are going to be in Arabic. But like Sofiane said, we do things for the Western media. Like I realized only recently that I always introduce myself as Mshari, not Mshari, even though Mshari is my name.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just so used to making it easier because from when I was a kid, I was in English schools and I had to make my name easy enough for Westerners to be able to pronounce it.
Yeah.
So that's just how I introduced myself. And it was one of those things that was flagged to me by Hind, Majid's wife, my business partner's wife. And it was just like, she was like, what's your name? And I'm like, Mshari. And she's like, what's your name? I'm like, Mshari. Okay, yeah. So, and then like now I've made an effort of like, okay, if I'm introducing myself to a Westerner, I say Mshari. The onus is on him. He's the one that has to figure out how to say my name. You know, I shouldn't have to make it easier.
It's so funny too that recently we've realized like when we were kids, my younger brother had a racist teacher and I didn't clock till recent because I don't know. We had a cousin from out of town that came in and he remembers my brother, like last time I saw him when he was a kid. And he goes like, and my brother's name is Mubarak, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes like, so what's up, Murphy? And we're like, huh? And we remembered my brother's English teacher in first grade couldn't say Mubarak. So she's like, I'm going to call you Murphy.
Damn.
Yeah. And we just recently remembered that because like he came to town and he's joking about it, right?
Oh
and
I'm my like, God.
Wait a second. That's right.
I
was like, we completely forgot about that. But like, you know, to that point, it's like, no. At least, you know, it was in first grade, but I think it was also my parents. They should have been like, Lada, Mubarak. Yeah. You got to figure out how to get this right, you know?
Yeah,
it's so funny.
Sofiane, two biggest things influencing the Arab identity right now. You're called a cultural cartographer. Right, that was what you were called in Vogue magazine.
Très bien.
Yeah, so tell me, what are the two biggest things?
I wanted to say something else before. Now, I just wanted to speak about Dubai.
Go for it.
I mean, the fact that Dubai is a great place also just to live proudly in our Arab identity.
Mm.
I've been a bit critical saying that we live here and we speak English like more than Arabic, but it's a question of choice. It's a question of choice. Like you need to speak Arabic as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a restaurant, when you meet with other Arabs, that's very important. That's iltizam. It's something that you need to
very true.
Make sure. Why I'm telling you that, because even though I'm proudly French, I have no problem with that. I grew up in France. But it's more difficult to give role models or just to give models of cultural pride. And I think that Dubai, I will never forget the first time I came here and I saw like some skyscrapers and Arabic letters, like Arabic text written on it.
Yeah.
It showed me that Arabic and like that Arabic and modernity can go together. I don't mean that skyscrapers are the only way of to modernity, but I mean that when you go to Dubai Future Foundation, when you go to, it's very important just to keep Arabic as a modern language.
True. Very true.
Yeah.
Okay. I like how you got that.
I wanted to get that. I knew I was going to say something that should have been on camera. I'm like, I got to get this.
Okay. So back to my question. Two biggest things affecting Arab identity today.
Positively or negatively?
Either way. Give me one for each. One of each. Yeah.
I would say media. Media is good for both. But yes. Like,
okay, but he already gave that answer. He took media. You can't take media.
You got me. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
Think about it.
I'm just thinking because I don't like just to think about like imposing a positive or negative things on the...
What? I feel like I'm trying to cheat an exam like writing.
No, because unfortunately writing, you know, like... It's quite sad when you look the number of books which are written in Arabic.
Yeah,
they're less than the books written in Portuguese. What was Arabic? You know, is one of the.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm quite sad when you go to any bookshop here. You see that the Arabic segment. Arabic book segment is very small. Why? Because we don't oblige ourselves.
Yeah.
Is that a Dubai thing or is that an Arab thing in general?
It's an Arab thing in general. I can see, like, I can give you, like,
so when you go to places names, that are, like, Arabic first?
Like, I would tell you, like, a very famous Arab author, she's Algerian, by the way, Ahlam Mustaghanmi. Ahlam Mustaghanmi is considered as one of the biggest, I mean, lately, contemporary Arab writer. But unfortunately, quite often people are proud saying, yeah, she's been translated in more than 35 languages. Why? Yeah, and if you're not translated in any other languages, it means that you're not famous enough. Which I mean, okay, it's a KPI. It's a also just to say that. But I mean that
it's just
the
business.
I would say the internet, like, it's not a media, but the internet is a great factor actually for the Arab identity, like positively and negatively. Why? Because negatively, we also bad images affecting our countries, our images, saying exactly what's going on in a lot of countries of the region, which actually brings you ka'abi, you know, like negativity. You're like, yeah. So this, my mother keeps like sending me like images of from all over the world. And and at the same time, internet, Instagram, Snapchat are a great way also just to see how the youth in the region is incorporating like new or modern technology to their daily life.
I think the worst thing to Arab in terms of trend, WhatsApp. We just forward stuff. All yo, aunties, uncles, like y'all need to stop forwarding things without double checking the source of that.
Like, my aunts, they like they call my mother and they're like, yeah. Nah, Mabiro Diani is not.
Just double check your sources before you forward these videos.
That's amazing. Okay, guys. So these are like a few questions that we just kind of that we ask all the guests.
Yeah.
So what part of the culture you grew up in do you carry with you always?
Ooh. One of my favorite things that I always like to carry with me is the hospitality.
Hospitality.
Yeah. All the time. And just like everybody else, I will fight you for the bill. And I always love that. It's just it's just beautiful in its essence. This idea of like, la wallah, I got you. And you know, this thing. And that moment is when I feel like Arab.
Right.
Right? And I love that. So that's one thing for sure.
What about you, Sufyan?
Being straightforward, which is very Algerian. Like, it can be it can be perceived as being aggressive, but being very straightforward.
Okay.
Like,
I need to hang out with more Algerians. People do not appreciate my straightforwardness. No. And what is the quality you most value in the people you keep around you?
Oh. I think it's two things. One is that they're visionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, we think too big intentionally because we think in the space of, we think in causing change. We think in whether it's a cultural change, whether it's a business economic change. And that's constantly the cycle we think in. And we're always thinking that big of, you know, in the next 10 years, what is the change that I'm going to impact around me? And these, like, I mean, Reem is such a powerful machine in that way, in the way she thinks and the way she wants to change things. And so is Akawi is learning that right now. And we always think that, okay, what is the biggest change I want to instill? Eventually, you want not just the city, but the entire region to know your name for causing change,
right?
And that's something we always think about.
Sufyan, same question.
One of the answers actually looks like a bit like what Ahmad said. It's ambition. It's very important to be with people who are like ambitious. Ambitious to personal change, but also like general change. Like not just staying as Hajra, you know, like just like a stone without being willing to change things. And the second one, which is, I mean, very important and linked also to ambition, is generosity. It's like, you're ambitious, but not just for yourself, for the people around you. So generosity means that you can spend time. I mean, you consider that you're not selfish just for yourself. You will spend time with friends. You will spend time with people when they need you. And and being generous also on advice and other things also.
Okay, amazing. And the last one is, what makes you happy?
Oh, people.
Tamiz.
Sorry. Tamiz. No, I think it's the people I surround myself with and the family I've chosen.
I see that.
Ramadan, time's gone. You guys, everybody's invited. I'll see that mine as soon as Ramadan hits.
So amazing. You're all welcome. All
there. You're all welcome to come through.
Cool. So people.
Yeah, always. People in my business. Like I drown in it at times, and that's all I do. And I don't see anybody for a few weeks, but it does. It's very. It's not only fulfilling. It generally makes me really happy.
It's amazing when you love what you do and you find it fulfilling.
I love it.
So two things: learning.
Learning.
Yeah. Like I hope inshallah I will learn things until the end of my days, end of my life. That's very important. Just to learn, like with every people, like. And it's why also I love being here. It's because like you can learn so many things from a lot of people. I know it sounds a bit like but I mean that's true. Yeah. I mean, and the second one is food, because food. I mean, my mother's food, but also like food in general. Because you generally like I don't like to eat alone.
Mm.
So it's sharing. You're always sharing things, and people always have like a lot of stories and experiences around food. So.
Okay, very cool.
I don't know. I don't look like somebody like eating a lot, but I do.
He meant, I guess you go to the gym. That's what
I don't.
All right, well, thank you guys.
I would have said food, but I've been on my training regimen.
So oh, really? I've heard about that.
Ask me on Friday. It's food on Fridays.
All right, well, thank you guys so much for being on today's episode.
Thank you.
Where can people go to find you if they want to hear about you or the projects you're working on?
All right. So you could just hit me up anywhere at OT Official, which is just OT for Omar Tom, and Dukan Media or Dukan Show. Just anywhere online, you'll find me.
Sufyan?
On the gram. At theconfusedarab.com.
Yeah. At the Confused Arab, right? Yeah. Cool. All right. So thanks for everyone for listening. I always love your comments and messages. So keep them coming. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anghami, or wherever you're listening. Join me next week for another episode of Millennial Mirrors. This is Imshad Al-Anezi signing out. Bye, guys.
Peace.
Bye.